Hello, I'm Duncan from the Dork Avengers. Some of you may have noticed that the latest issue of the Dork Avengers has been heavily delayed. Peter, do you want to explain why?
No, I'm fine with it.
Peter, do you want to apologise?
Fine. Listeners, I'm very sorry. It's been a while. I've been both busy and lazy at the same time. So, yeah, what you're about to hear was recorded in late January. So bits of it may seem less sharp and satirical than we usually are. To be honest, most of the extra editing time was thanks to Dunk's many jokes about Whitney Houston that I had to cut out.
Well, I didn't know she was going to die.
But we do hope to have the next one out in the next couple of weeks, so hope you enjoy the show.
From a basement in Ealing, a team of ineffectual superheroes casts a watchful eye over the world of nerd. Whenever there's a movie trailer to be dissected, whenever there's a Joss Whedon project to be discussed, whenever there's a squeeze to be squeezed, there will be the Dork Avengers!
Hello, you're listening to Volume 2, Issue 1 of the Dork Avengers podcast, the podcast which reserves the right to revert to its original numbering at any time. I'm Pete Dillon Trenchard, and with me, having been granted an injunction against me using any silly middle names against him, is Duncan Robert Enris Heaney.
I can't really complain about that one because that one is my real middle name. Peter Charles Sampson Dillon Trenchard.
Yeah, I've got to say, I'm on dodgy ground criticising your middle names. It is a mouthful. I think my parents must have really hated me as a kid.
Oh, they hate you as an adult too, to be fair.
Welcome to the podcast.
That's the trouble with regeneration. You never quite know what you're going to get.
So Pete, why are we Volume 2, Issue 1? Why are we not Episode 7?
We're like Marvel, you know, it's like Johnny Storm is dead, so now we're Issue 1 of Volume 2. When Johnny Storm comes back at the end of this run, we'll revert to Issue 13.
So does one of us not have to be dead for this to work?
Here's hoping.
I'll get you a hammer. Okay, so, right, with Volume 2, Issue 1, what is different, Pete?
Well, I like to think I've gotten a little bit sexier since the last podcast.
Yeah, you keep thinking that.
We've also decided to ditch some of our minor side characters. For instance, Dunk. What's the name of a video game series where the character wears all green and has a sword and defends Hyrule?
Legend of Zelda.
Oh, I see, that just got bleeped out.
Oh.
Because Legend of Zelda is one of the things that we're not allowed to say anymore.
So did you just bleep out when you said it again there?
I did.
Are you sure people are going to know enough that it's Legend of Zelda to know that we're talking about Legend of Zelda and not just hear a lot of bleeps when we talk about Legend of Zelda?
They will, because I'm really shit at bleeping.
Oh yeah, well if I'm not allowed to talk about Zelda, you're not allowed to talk about a really crap TV show in which spandex-clad men and women turn into giant robots and beat up each other.
What do you mean, VR Troopers?
No, you know the one I'm talking about.
Oh, Power Rangers. You son of a bitch!
See, you shouldn't have told me how to bleep stuff.
I'm still allowed to say Gokaiger, so it's okay.
Yes.
So, Dunk, now that we know what we haven't got coming up on today's podcast, what have we got coming up?
This week we'll be reviewing Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol, a film which had a disappointing lack of ectoplasm. We'll be shining the Eye of Thundera on some Thundercats forums.
Sword of Omens, give me strength.
And you'll be telling me why I'm wrong to like Batman the Animated Series.
So, shall we get on with it then?
If we have to.
We do. Happy new series, everyone.
9, 8, 7, 6, 5.
Get out!
Three,
get out of there! Get out!
1.
So, Dunk, what did you get up to in January?
It's really been a month of education for me, Pete. One thing I've learned is that under no circumstances should you ever criticise Sherlock on Twitter. I had the temerity to suggest.
What does temerity mean?
I don't know. I just like the word, I'm using it.
Right.
I had the gall to suggest that the final episode of the last series of Sherlock was not particularly satisfying.
The temerity, you might say. Okay, what was your problem with the final episode of Sherlock?
It was unsatisfying. There was no resolution at all.
Actually, Dunk, I think you'll find there was quite a lot of resolution, especially if you watched it on the BBC One HD simulcast.
Oh, I see what you did there.
Yeah, it's a joke about graphics.
Yes.
Yeah.
I guess you could call it a joke. I suppose it was by definition.
It's like we've never been away, isn't it, Dunk?
So my point was, I invested 90 minutes into this episode. There was no resolution. If you didn't see it, I'm going to ruin it for you now. Sherlock Holmes jumped off a roof and apparently killed himself and then turned up alive at the end with no explanation.
Okay, now I've got to stop you for a moment because that wasn't the first thing you said. Because I think the thing that originally got you some criticism, your original tweet read, well, that was a hugely unsatisfying ending.
Also, that's what she said.
Yeah, if only you'd have had the temerity to say that at the time.
Stop saying temerity.
I don't know what it means either. Also, bizarrely similar to the recent Sherlock movie. Now, do you see the mistake you made there to begin with?
Well, yes. I did not mean that the fact that Sherlock Holmes killed himself and turned up alive was the similarity. That wasn't the point I was making. Well, the point I was making, and I admit I was unclear, was the fact that the way they did it, with Sherlock's appearing alive at the end, not telling Watson, and just, like, appearing out of the background, was very similar. And I think that's why I didn't like the end of the episode. If Sherlock Holmes had killed himself and that had ended, it would have been an ending.
Yeah.
The plot threads had all been resolved. Because Sherlock Holmes didn't kill himself and just appeared alive, none of the plot threads were actually resolved. And I said this on Twitter, and immediately I got torrents of abuse. Ew, no, you didn't watch all the clues properly. If you watch the clues, it's clear what really happened. Well, yes, but I saw three separate theories within 10 minutes of the end of the episode. Maybe one of them's right, but the fact there were three separate ones mean that it hasn't been. The answer isn't there.
I think Sherlock Holmes was secretly Nightcrawler.
And he bamfed out.
He bamfed out, yeah.
When Nightcrawler actually is dead.
Yeah, or is he? It's Marvel Comics, so he's definitely not.
Yeah, and people saying things like, oh, that was the most amazing thing I've ever seen on TV. It justifies the license fee alone. No, it doesn't. It justifies the £9.99 it'll cost on DVD when it comes out. Actually, by the time this comes out, it will have come out.
Sherlock Series 2, available on DVD now.
Yeah.
So, did you manage to deal with these comments on Twitter, or did you cry into a hole?
I did what I always do when I see idiocy on Twitter. I ignored it and hoped it went away. Like a time I had that tumour.
Every household in America, thousands of you eating. That's what you had in mind all along, isn't it?
No shit, Sherlock.
We're not talking about one hungry plant here. We're talking about world conquest.
So when I said education, it's not just the Sherlock Holmes rubbish that I've been going through. My sister got me for Christmas, very kindly, the latest Professor Layton game. And it's a lot of fun. I remember realising that Professor Layton is a bit of a dick.
4 games in and you're only just realising that?
Well, I've always suspected, but, you know, I mean, he puts on this veneer of being a gentleman, a kind of a father figure to his apprentice Luke. Actually, he's just an utter bastard to him. Every time Luke wants to do something, if they're solving a mystery and Luke finds some evidence on the ground, before he's allowed to pick it up, Professor Layton's going to hit him with a puzzle.
Not literally hit him.
Well, if he doesn't get it right, I wouldn't be surprised. Do you want to maybe explain what Layton is, if people haven't experienced it?
It's a game in which this guy who's basically a in a top hat, and he walks around towns, which usually turn out to be just towns full of robots, solving puzzles and trying to get to the bottom of some tedious mystery or other.
That pretty much sums it up. All the way you're having logic puzzles thrown at you.
Yeah. My problem is has always been that, although a small handful of the puzzles relate to the plot at hand, most of them are like, ah, I see a fish. That reminds me of a puzzle.
Well, see, that's the thing I've been experiencing. I mean, on the one hand, it's educational, though. I feel my brain is improving because of these puzzles. On the other hand, I have found myself looking at stuff and going, that reminds me of a puzzle.
I get the same feeling when I look at most girls.
They are a puzzle neither of us will ever solve.
Frankly, I'm ashamed.
How have you been since the new year?
I took a trip to my old hometown, Tamworth.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, on Google Street View.
Right. So you didn't actually leave the house to go
Didn't
to
actually leave the house. No, I did genuinely spend 2 hours sat in my room just retracing like my old route to school, my old route into town, stuff like that via Google Street View.
Right. Planning routes. That reminds me of a puzzle.
Oh, dear. Hit me.
You want to get into a castle.
No, I don't.
Shush.
Tamworth Castle was always really scary. It had a big hologram of Richard III at the beginning. Apparently it's still there.
Hologram. Holograms are cool. Anyway, please leave all your questions and comments till the end of the riddle. You want to get into this castle.
What castle?
A castle that contains a fair princess that you want to rescue.
Is rescue a euphemism?
Yes.
Okay. This does sound like me.
Yes. So, anyway, you want to get into this castle, but around this castle is a 10-metre moat. This 10-metre wide moat goes...
But it's only 1 foot deep, so I can just walk across it.
No, it's not. So around this castle is a 10-metre wide moat that is very, very, very deep and filled with poisonous electric sharks.
Do they really need to be both poisonous and electric?
I'm just making sure there's no way that you can swim across.
I think Professor Layton would be much better if Luke just interjected into every puzzle like this.
He would beat Luke if that was the case. Anyway, so you want to get across...
I don't.
So you hire the only bridge builder in the village. But because he's a little bit special, he can only create bridges of 9.5 metres. How do you get into the castle and rescue the princess? I will now take your questions.
Okay. Are there any laboratories nearby where I can get bitten by an irradiated spider?
No.
Okay. Am I a multi-billionaire and do I have a bat cave and a batarang and can just swing into the castle?
No. How would you swing into the castle? There's nothing to swing from.
There's the turrets.
How would you reach the turrets? They're a 10 metre wide moat in the
way. Throw the batarang at the turrets.
Batarang!
You swing into the windows.
You can't swing. They can't throw a
batarang. Shag the princess. Leave again.
You can't throw a batarang 10 metres. You're not that strong.
Okay, fine. Was I born on the planet Krypton?
No.
Right.
Tell you what. You have a think about it over the course of the episode, and maybe I'll tell you the solution at the end.
Banff?
No. You're not Sherlock Holmes.
Welcome, Watchers of Illusion, to the Castle of Confusion. Phase with us now, for this is the time of adventure.
So, what else have you been doing since the last podcast, Pete?
Well, yesterday I went to a charity shop.
Oh, great story to start with. I went to a charity shop.
I went into a charity shop in Ealing yesterday, and I picked up a couple of DVDs.
As you are wont to do.
As I want to do. I think I'm fast approaching 1,000 DVDs in my collection now.
Wow.
And that's counting box sets as one DVD.
Bloody hell.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you started watching them all from start to finish, you'd probably be dead by the time they got to the end of the stack.
I'm quite a big hypochondriac, so I always feel like that if I start watching, say, a four-part Doctor Who story.
Go on then, Pete, show me these DVDs.
Well, I bought two DVDs. Now, the first one here is... It's called Cat's TV Show.
Okay, let me have a look at this box. It has a cat in an armchair with some chips.
Yeah,
I think that's American for crisps. Pete, what the hell is this?
Yeah, what this is a TV show that is made especially to appeal to the much neglected cat demographic of TV watchers.
So, what is it? Just balls of yarn and...
Not too far off, actually. It's basically a series of scenes of sort of each about 30 seconds long of things like birds and squirrels and goldfish and for some reason turtles.
It's veterinarian recommended, it says on the box.
Yeah, it's the TV recommended for pet owners who want their cats to destroy their television set while they're out at work. Because it is just a never-ending string of cat bait.
Images of prey.
The best thing about it is that these scenes are quite clearly filmed in a pet shop.
Right.
A lot of them. The first scene is kind of a fish tank scene with some fish swimming around. You can actually hear the sounds of the other animals in the pet shop in the background. It's brilliant.
Can I ask you a very serious question?
Yeah.
Do you own a cat?
No.
Do you plan to own a cat?
No.
Is there any chance of a cat ever entering your home?
Well, I'm hoping that there's a chance of some pussy entering my home.
Is that a no?
That's a no.
Why did you buy a DVD for cats?
I thought it might be a laugh. I'm going to die alone, aren't I? Thing is, that wasn't the only DVD I bought in the charity shop, but it was the DVD that I chose to put on top when giving it to the cashiers. I decided this was the least embarrassing of the two purchases I was making.
I can't think of anything more embarrassing than buying a DVD that is made for cats.
Glee Season 1, Volume 1.
Yeah, okay, enough said. I would say I'm a little bit ashamed of you, but I remember you once bought 8 series of Sybil on a whim.
6 series of Sybil.
Oh, right, that makes it better.
It was 6 series of Sybil for £6.
Yeah, and you were overcharged.
That's what I've been up to in January. I bought some DVDs.
So, same old, same old?
Same old, same old. Except, obviously, in the last podcast, we did set ourselves some resolutions for the new year.
Yeah.
How have those been going for you, Dunk?
Dragon's Den-wise, possibly okay. I've had a couple of ideas for businesses. A couple of restaurants. One is a restaurant where the theme is around food. No, that's all restaurants. Shit.
Sounds like a winner to me, Dunk.
I didn't mean food. What I meant was sculpture.
I always get those two confused.
You go to the restaurant and you order your food. The food is not just a piece of delicious mealage.
Mealage?
I don't know. I'm drunk. You don't just get a delicious meal.
Yeah.
You also get a work of art.
Okay.
So, for example, you order sausage and mash, classic English meal. What you get is you get a dome of mash with some vegetable on top in kind of a hexagonal pattern. 4 sausages sticking out, like 2 on each side, and 1 as a head, and you get like a little sausage and mash tortoise. Okay, and it doesn't have
to... And who's this going to appeal to? The people who really wish they could eat a tortoise?
Tortoise was apparently delicious enough for them to eat them to eat them so they were extinct.
Yeah, but the difference is that mash doesn't taste of tortoise, does it?
Well, no, but this is, I'm not, it doesn't have to be sculptable food like mash and polenta and couscous and rice. You know, those can be moulded into shapes with the right sauce. So you can have like a swan made out of rice and korma. Sounds delicious, right?
No.
Yeah, it does.
How would that work?
You'd have like a swan made out of rice, sticky rice, in the shape of a swan.
Okay, and where would the
hollowed
korma
out.
Be? Hang on, so what about the neck? The defining feature of a swan, how would you achieve that?
Oh, maybe a swan's not the best choice for this. Why are you looking at me like that?
Because this is a ridiculous idea. And how long is this going to take to prepare?
No, I'm not a cook.
I think this might be the big flaw in your restaurant plan.
The other idea I've had is kind of a Viking-themed restaurant. So the restaurant is kind of themed like a big longboat.
Okay.
Obviously, people don't have to row. In the middle of the restaurant, there's a big fire with an animal spit roast, and that's all it serves. You go in, and you just have a slice of the animal.
Right, so there's no vegetarian option.
No, I'm not catering to those attention-seeking f***ers.
And you don't see any problem at all with having a restaurant where there's a massive fire in the middle of it?
No, because there would be a hole in the roof.
Let me tell you, I'm out.
Yeah, well,
Duncan Bannatyne.
How about yours? What were yours? Comedy. Yes, you did get into comedy.
As I say, I've done the comedy resolution. That's done.
Tick on the
Tick.
List.
The second one, obviously, to stop having stupid crushes. And it was going so well.
Who did you see?
Well, the thing is, for Christmas, my mum bought me the series 1-4 box set of the TV series 30 Rock, starring Tina Fey.
I've heard of her.
As a bespectacled, nerdy woman.
Yeah, that's kind of your thing, isn't it?
Pretty much, so yeah. Not going so well. I've written a few letters. That resolution put an X next to it.
Damn it.
But of course, how's your sport resolution been going?
Well, I haven't found a sport to sign up for. This is the problem I've been having. I mean, I considered golf, but the only crazy golf course I could find was somewhere in East London. I don't want to go there. So, work in progress. Don't cross it yet. But it's not.
It's
quite
already
tipped.
Crossed.
Oh, damn it.
And then, of course, there's the other resolution we came up with, which was the resolution of the diet resolution.
Yeah, ask me what I had for dinner yesterday, Pete.
What did you have for dinner yesterday, Dunk?
I had roast lamb, roast potatoes, swede, cabbage, gravy.
That sounds like a semi-healthy meal.
On a pizza.
Oh, for f***'s sake.
I know.
And, of course, I guess you didn't have a dessert.
Two cookies with ice cream in the middle.
Two cookies with ice cream in the middle. So, but, of course, I was also there...
Yeah, Pete, tell me what you had. I'm going to make a noise every time you have something that breaks the diet.
Well, Dunk. I had some nice grilled tandoori chicken.
Blug.
Really?
Tandoori chicken. No. All Indian food is bad for you, Pete. There is no such thing as healthy Indian food.
Okay, well, let's just reserve judgment, shall we? I also had yogurt, mint yogurt, with cucumber and broccoli. So, you know, not too bad as things go.
Yeah, so...
On a pizza.
Oh, Pete. Meh. Meh. That's the you broke the diet.
Right.
I wish it was the first time I'd broken the diet as well.
Yep.
But it hasn't been.
Well, by January 3rd, I was going to Nando's on my own.
Yeah, I haven't been that bad. Last week, I did have a burrito. The burrito place on the way home from work was having a special offer. So I bought two burritos. I had one burrito for dinner and one for breakfast.
Not going well so far, is it, Dunk?
The day this podcast goes public is the day that we diet starts.
Yep, starts now. Start.
Well, no, next week when it goes public.
Yeah, whenever you're listening to this, the diet starts now.
Yeah. Before you win next issue on how it's going.
I predict really badly.
I don't really think it's fair for me to be on a jury because I can read thoughts.
Dismissed.
So on to this issue's film review. And Pete, your mission, should you choose to accept it, is to summarise Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol.
Do I have to accept it?
You don't have to, but if you don't, I'll just stand here next to you going, bop, 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 bop.
Okay, I'll do it.
So what is Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol about then, Pete?
Well, Dunk. Ghost Protocol is the fourth film in the increasingly tedious Mission Impossible film series. It stars Tom Cruise as Ethan Hawke, I think.
Ethan Hunt,
whatever.
You already failed your mission.
I've already failed. He's the guy...
Keep pushing, push through, come on.
He's based on the guy from the TV series, anyway, who may or may not have been played by Leonard Nimoy or the guy from Space 99. I know they were both in it at some point.
Have you done any research for this?
There's some stuff about nuclear launch codes that got stolen by some...
Come on, you're running off of me, about 20 seconds left.
He was the villain, and he wasn't very good, he was very bland.
What's the plot of the film, Pete?
There's launch codes, nuclear war...
Some launch codes have been stolen, Tom Cruise has got to get them back.
Russia, Dubai, Ta-da!
You will never, ever be a secret agent.
Or a film reviewer. Yeah, so Mission Impossible. Did you go into this positively? Did you have a positive opinion of the first three films?
I went into it interested. I wouldn't say I went into it particularly positive because I really didn't enjoy the last three.
I thought the most recent one was better than the first two.
But... Yes, it was, but it's like saying being stabbed in the eye is better than being stabbed in the neck. You wouldn't want either one to happen.
Not to me, anyway.
But what about you, Pete?
Well, you see, when it came out, I thought the first Mission Impossible was quite good. You know, it was quite kind of gadgety and fun.
See, I remember being confusing and tedious, but...
There were lots of masks, and people would take off the masks, and it'd be like, aha, I'm really Tom Cruise. But no, I'm really one of the other people who was in it. And now, 15 years later, we've got Mission Impossible 4.
Which I actually think is better than 3.
I suppose you are a massive Simon Pegg fan.
So I would say Simon Pegg was the best character in this film. In that he had one.
See, I would actually disagree. I mean, because Simon Pegg was in the last film, and in that film he was very much the kooky cameo.
Well, there's three types of Brits in American movies, aren't there? There's classy, sexy Brit, like Hugh Grant.
Okay.
Or Colin Firth, or any of the Royals. There's evil Brit, like any action movie of the 80s and 90s. And then there's kooky...
John McClane.
He was German.
Was he?
Alan Rickman. He was playing German. And there's kooky Brit.
See, I would argue there's actually four types of Brit in films. There's the sexy, stylish Brit.
Yeah, sure.
There's the evil Brit. Yeah. There's the kooky Brit.
Yep.
And there's Ricky Gervais.
Yeah.
I feel he deserves a character all to his own because he is just playing himself. Simon Pegg kind of did that in Mission Impossible 3 for me. I mean, he just kind of turned up in the late stages of the film as a quirky team member who was like, hello, I'm your tech support.
Yeah, he was playing kooky Brit.
Yeah.
Which he was playing kooky Brit in Mission Impossible 4 as well.
Yeah.
Sorry, Mission Impossible Ghost Rider.
I kind of wish he had been Ghost Rider. I mean, say what you want about Nick Cage, and
okay,
I will.
He's... no.
But even he had more personality than Tom Cruise's character had in this film.
The big problem I've had with the Mission Impossible series is that Tom Cruise's character is just a guy who does stuff. If you'd asked me to describe Tom Cruise's character, I couldn't do it. Is he brave? I guess, maybe. Is he got a sense of humour? No idea.
That's it. He's basically like James Bond, but without the womanising and the quips. So he's like Daniel Craig's James Bond. Which I guess is why they've brought in Simon Pegg to kind of be the full-time... But it really doesn't work in this film. In this, he turned from being kooky Brit to being kooky Brit who won't shut the f*** up.
Yeah, he does that thing that becomes increasingly annoying as the film goes on, where somebody will say something, and then he'll say some kind of terrible one-liner, and everyone will look at him weird, and it'll cut to the next scene. You know, so I'd like to think of an example. Okay, so I'll be Tom Cruise... Yeah, okay, I'll be an inflatable Tom Cruise.
Okay. Let's face it, we're both Nick Frost.
Okay, guys, we're going to break into the home of the Russian president and steal the documents. That's my American accent.
Well, I suppose we'd better be on the lookout for any Kremlins in the system.
Next scene. That's what it's like. It's like a terrible one-liner, cut to the next scene.
I did feel there was one good character in this film, though.
Yeah, Jeremy Renner.
Jeremy Renner. He was playing a kind of analyst fella, wasn't he?
An analyst with a dark secret.
That turned out not to be that dark.
No, fairly light secret.
Yeah.
Kind of, I'd say puce in colour.
You make me puce.
Yep.
Next scene. I actually really liked him in this. I thought he was quite good as the kind of irritable comic foil.
He does a thing where he looks to camera, and like you can see in his eyes this is crap.
If his eyes made a noise, the noise would be wah, wah, wah.
Yeah. But then he's good, but he's basically a poor man's Nathan Fillion. And Nathan Fillion is basically a poor man's Brendan Fraser. Ow!
You saw what happened with Sherlock. Do you really want to knock another geek item on a podcast that is listened to by upwards of 6 people?
It goes down every time.
It goes down. It was 7 before Christmas. Yeah.
Well, no, I'm not insulting Nathan Fillion. I like Nathan Fillion. I mean, I'll be a brown coat forever. That's because I don't really put it in the washing machine. But Jeremy Renner was good in this. His action scene was pretty good when he's magnetised and he's floating through the server tunnels.
Yeah, it didn't really make much sense, but it was good.
Well, at that point, I was just happy for something interesting to happen. The action scenes actually were pretty good throughout, I thought. The centrepiece scene where Tom Cruise is climbing up the side of the tallest building in Dubai,
yeah,
and the world, I believe, and then rappelling down, I thought was superbly done.
That scene was good. I don't share your enthusiasm about most of the rest of the action scenes in the film, though. Especially Tom Cruise's lengthy chase scenes with the nondescript villain.
The one in the sandstorm was bad. It went on forever.
But yeah, it's particularly bad to have a long chase scene where you can't see any of the characters.
Yeah. What characters?
I mean, there were good bits. I quite liked the kind of the use of gadgets in the film.
Yeah.
I thought that was very kind of approaching some of my favourite James Bond films, the kind of Pierce Brosnan era.
Pierce Brosnan?
Pierce Brosnan, yeah. And, you know, as we say, if he'd have had more of a character, it would have been a serviceable James Bond film. But he didn't, so it wasn't.
I had the same issue I had with the Transformers movies, which was, no matter how well done the action is, if there's no reason to care, it's not particularly interesting.
Yeah.
This was not as bad as Transformers.
The last hour of Transformers 3 was just a bunch of people I didn't know or care about running through a bunch of stuff I couldn't recognise on fire. There's nothing interesting about that. Anyway, back to Tower Heist.
See, I thought the last scene, the last chase through the car showroom, or the car factory, or whatever it was, cars moving on conveyor belts, basically, was interesting and well staged.
It was just
good.
A bunch of stuff that wouldn't stop moving. And then it culminated in this really ludicrous bit where Tom Cruise gets in a car and just jumps it off a cliff and plunges headlong, but survives because the airbag goes up.
Well, look, if Indiana Jones can survive being blown up in a nuclear explosion by going inside a fridge, Tom Cruise can survive a small fall inside a BMW.
That's a depressingly fair point.
I don't think there's much more to say about the film, to be honest.
No. So what would you give it out of five?
It's not a bad film, I don't think.
It is quite a bad film.
I'll be honest with you, Pete, I'm wavering between a 3 and a 2. The action scenes were great. There was no reason to care about them. But yeah, they were great.
But if a BMW falls and nobody's there to give a rat's arse, does it still earn a star?
It earns 2 stars, Pete. 2 stars out of 5.
Okay, yeah, I'm going to be predictable and copy you and also go for 2 out of 5. For 2 reasons. Although I thought most of it was quite bad and dull. And I did actually want to walk out of the film halfway through. But yeah, the action scenes were good, the gadgets were good. And crucially, the other point which makes me give it 2 stars rather than 1 is that it wasn't anywhere near as much of a train wreck as Johnny English. We set ourselves a very low bar very early on. And this film, as rubbish as it was, would never be as bad as that.
So 2 stars apiece, 4 out of 10.
4 out of 10.
So not so much Mission Impossible as Mission Shouldn't Have Bothered.
Being a Scientologist, when you drive past an accident, it's not like anyone else. As you drive past, you know you have to do something about it, because you know you're the only one that can really help.
And now it's time for the welcome return of Forum Watch.
Actually, Pete, before we start Forum Watch, how are you getting on with that puzzle?
Can I tape a surfboard to the bridge?
No, you can use a hint coin if you want.
Okay, yeah, give me a hint coin.
Stop eating so much food, you're getting fat.
Aww.
So, a Forum Watch.
Thundercats. So yeah, we're looking at Thundercats forums. I've actually gone to the home of the Thundercats, thundercatslair.org.
I thought the home of the Thundercats was Thundera.
It's actually thundercatslair.org.
Right.
Where they're asking all the important questions about Thundercats.
Oh, right. Okay, is this going to be like, which Thundercat do you fancy? Are we already starting with the sexualisation of
Thundercats? No, because there's no point in asking which Thundercat you fancy, because the only fanciable Thundercat is Cheetara.
Right.
So it's not even a question.
Okay, so what is this about?
Well, Shigsy 2003...
Hi, good Shigsy.
...has written, Thundercats, ho...
As a question.
As a question. He says, we all know that when Lionel needs assistance, you know, he'll shout, ho! Why is this? What's the significance of saying, ho?
Well, he's the king of the Thundercats. If he wants a ho, he just has to ask.
And, you know, Cheetara.
Oh, no, I meant like a ho for ploughing the fields. I mean, when they move to this different planet, there's a lot of farming involved.
No, that's H-O-E. This is just H-O.
Oh, right. Maybe he's practicing to be Santa. Thundercats, ho, ho, ho.
There's this guy, He-Fan,
right,
who says, Chris here.
Hi, Chris.
Hi, Chris. In reality, I suspect Thundercats Ho was chosen because it sounds like a great thing to shout. No, it doesn't.
No, it really doesn't.
He says, open your bedroom window now. I'm not in my bedroom. I'm in the living room. But
I thought we were in a basement in Ealing.
And shout, Thundercats Ho! Oh! Just put in enough of those.
Okay.
Down your street as loud as you possibly can. If you don't feel silly, you'll feel brilliant.
Well, I suppose we could test it. I mean, it doesn't have to be a bedroom window. Let's try it now.
Okay.
Okay.
Dunk, go for it.
Okay.
Duncan is now opening the French window at the back of the room.
Thundercats, ho!
Dunk, welcome back. How do you feel?
Turns out I feel silly.
You feel silly. Not brilliant.
No. Looking at this post here by Lil Leo, just wondering, what do your family still think of Thundercats? Does your significant other enjoy it, or think you're absolutely weird for still liking a 20-year-old cornball kids show?
I don't think that my family think a lot about Thundercats, to be honest. I think it's something that doesn't cross their minds very often.
I think your family thinks you're weird, but not for liking a 20-year-old cornball kids show.
No, they do think I'm weird for liking a 20-year-old kid cornball kid show, just not that cornball kid show.
As a 30-year-old terminally single girl...
Whoa, wait, what? Hello, Leo. There's no need for this illness to be terminal.
Simmer down, boy, simmer down.
Okay.
Think about Ricky Gervais naked, eating a peach.
Oh.
There you go. As a 30-year-old terminally single girl...
Hello!
For God's sake! I have to live through those of you who have families, though I'm thinking of converting my nephews.
To what?
She's going to assimilate them like the Borg from Star Trek.
A collective of little Leos.
Oh, for God's sake. Let's move on to the next post.
Okay.
He-Fan says, Chris here.
Hello, Chris.
Hi, Chris. As a terminally single, almost 27-year-old man...
Hang on. I don't want to take little Leo away from me. But if
I want to take little Leo away from you for her own safety.
Well, in that case, if Chris is a terminally single man, right?
Yeah. Okay, I'm following you so far.
Little Leo is a terminally single girl.
Right.
Why don't they just do it?
Do what?
Sex.
Don't get it. No, well, He-Fan has had a girlfriend, Pete.
Yeah.
The only girlfriend I've ever briefly had.
Uh-huh. See, I've only had one girlfriend as well, but it lasted for almost 2 years. So, I win!
The only girlfriend I've ever briefly had liked Thundercats up to a point, but was an obsessive fan of He-Man and She-Ra, so wasn't in a position to criticise.
That's a fair point.
Yeah, I'm sure there's plenty of other things about He-Man to criticise.
Yeah.
Keaton, he says, a girlfriend once agreed to dress up as Pumira. I don't think she considered it particularly weird. It was one of my less disturbing requests. I don't know, who's Pumira?
I don't think it matters, Dunk. I think I'd like to know more about what his other requests are. You know, is it, could you please dress up as Krang and kind of get me with your tentacles? And
can you dress as Ricky Gervais naked eating a peach?
Why do you always have to kill the mood?
So, Pete, what other threads did you find?
I got one here. Dispensing advice to the characters. Have you ever watched the cartoon? And
yes. Sorry.
That's not the question,
right,
Dunk.
Sorry.
Have you ever watched the cartoon and really just want to jump through the screen at some point and talk some sense into any one of the characters in any given situation?
No, because I don't need to, because at the end of every episode they do that themselves.
I think you're thinking of He-Man.
No, they do it in Thundercats as well, I think.
Do they? Did Thundercats have morals?
Not as explicitly, but they... I remember once when they defeated Safari Joe.
Safari Joe?
Safari Joe was one of the villains of Thundercats.
Right.
I think Lionel said something like, we only defeated Safari Joe, Snarf, because we worked as a team. As long as you have friends with you, you can overcome any kind of problem.
That's right, Oracle.
You see, you mock my American accent. But at least mine doesn't sound like Terry Wogan.
Yeah, Manny says, I've done that with many cartoons, not just Thundercats.
Does he specify what cartoons?
I don't know. I think the important point is there is that Manny's jumped into the television. Because the thread is about, have you ever wanted to do that? Manny's just like, I've done it.
Right.
Done it, mate.
But he's never done it with Thundercats.
Never done it with Thundercats.
Maybe the thing at the end of He-Man where they do the moral. Maybe that's just Manny jumping in every time.
Maybe. Maybe Manny is Orko.
Oh, there's a depressing thought for him.
I don't know. I think it would only increase his social standing. I've got a thread here. It's the inevitable thread on any Thundercats forum.
Oh, right. Which Thundercat do you want to have sex with? How would the Thundercats have sex with each other? Sex, sex, sex.
No, it's your opinion on Snarf. Oh. What's your opinion on Snarf, Dunk?
Yeah, I find him annoying, but slightly endearing. A bit like you. Well, what do you think about Snarf, Pete?
I think he's a Duca would quite like to know what people think about Snarf. I think Duca seems to quite like him. Well, He-Fan replies saying, Chris here.
Hi, Chris.
Hi, Chris.
You say Chris here every time.
Yep, every time. We get it, Chris. You know, your name is actually on the side of the forum. Every time you post, it says site team leader. Yet you don't seem to understand how internet forums work. But Chris has always liked Snarf. But then again, Chris also really loves the character of Orko in Masters of the Universe, so his opinion is irrelevant. Amalfia says, I think Snarf is like Jar Jar Binks. You either love him or hate him.
Well, no, nobody loves Jar Jar Binks.
You hate him, yeah. Cheetara says, I think Snarf is hot.
That just broke the heart of about 20,000 billion fans.
I don't see why fans would be broken knowing that Cheetara is into short, fat men. If anything, they're more aroused than ever. Snarf obviously isn't the only character that's hotly debated on the Thundercats forums.
No, who else is?
Cheetara.
Oh, and there we go.
Well, this thread asks, did Cheetara start any guy's fascination for cat girls? And refreshingly, the first reply says, no. Just no. And I think that sums up my thoughts on most of this forum, to be honest. No. Just no. So yeah, thank you very much, Thundercats fans.
Thanks, Chris.
Bye, Chris.
Say something. So on to the section of the show where we try and introduce each other to new experiences.
It's been mixed in previous weeks. Obviously, I've hated most of the things you've introduced me to, and you've hated most of the things I've introduced you to.
Of the four we've done, three haven't gone well, one went very well.
And that was the one that I introduced you to. So really, I'm winning on this at the moment.
Right. This week, I thought I'd plug a big hole in your geek knowledge by introducing you to Batman and the Animated Series, one of the most acclaimed animated series of all time.
I've already seen Batman.
No, Batman the Animated Series.
I only need one Batman, really.
I was kind of wondering how I should do this. I mean, the way I saw it, I had two options. I could either show you an episode or a couple of episodes, or show you the Mask of the Phantasm movie, which is spun off the animated series.
And you chose the movie.
I did, for the sake of convenience, really.
Wasn't that convenient. I had to watch it in 8 separate parts on YouTube.
It's a film that has more issues than I remember, but I do think it's a film that shows what the animated series is about pretty well. I mean, tonally and the writing is very similar to the animated series, and the performances are all from the animated series, and the style is all from the animated series. Pete, what did you think of it?
Well. Oh, dear.
Now, let me start with the positive. Once it got going, I thought there was a lot of good stuff in there. I thought Mark Hamill was very good as the Joker. Unrecognisable from Luke Skywalker, which I think hats off to him. I mean, he's possibly the campest Joker I've ever seen. And given that Cesar Romero really camped it up in the 60s, that's saying something.
Yeah, but I like that. Especially when he switches from being super camp to super threatening.
But he's still super threatening in a very camp way.
Oh, yeah.
Putting on this kind of cod British accent.
Yes, he's playing Evil Brit.
But also Kooky Brit.
Yeah, Kooky Evil Brit. Wow, he's crossing boundaries. What a pioneer.
So once it got going, there was a lot of action, there was a lot of sort of nice dialogue, etc. Most of the voice acting wasn't There was one guy who was pretty awful, and that was the councilman Arthur something or other.
Yeah, he's an incidental character, really.
Well, yeah.
Not in terms of the plot, but he only ever appears in the movie. You don't think he ever shows his face in the cartoon.
Well, that's good, because he was fairly awful. And I thought Commissioner Gordon was a bit poor as well.
See, I can't see that. I mean, I guess because I watched it when I was a kid, that's just what he sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, for me, obviously, Commissioner Gordon will always be the one from the 60s Batman, who was always accompanied by the possibly slightly racist Chief O'Hara.
Holy stereotype, Batman!
Ah, begorra, Batman. I don't think you know what you're doing.
Certainly the film had a slower pace.
The film didn't start to get going until the Joker turned up about 50 minutes in.
It was slow to start. I mean, there was a lot of character stuff, but I thought it was good character stuff.
The character stuff was dull. I mean, it was about Batman's weird and heretofore unmentioned relationship with some woman who they start flirting over her parents' graveside, which I found slightly distasteful, I'll be honest, Dunk.
Everyone needs a wingman or wingwoman. Yeah.
These flashbacks turn into basically the story of the origin of Batman as in the animated series. And I forget, how did he become Batman in the films?
His parents die, he gets all depressed, goes off, learns martial arts.
He kind of takes inspiration from the bats in his cave of solitude, doesn't
he? Yeah, basically, his parents die, he gets all emo, learns to fight and becomes Batman.
You see, in Batman Mask of the Phantasm, Bruce Wayne becomes Batman because a girl breaks up with him.
He's like, I'm going to be Batman. Ooh, hot girl. I'm not going to be Batman. Oh, she's breaking up with me. I'm going to be Batman.
Definitely going to be Batman. I wouldn't mind, but he's not actually a very competent Batman. I mean, at one point she calls him the world's greatest detective. He isn't. I mean, there's very little detecting going on in this film.
He doesn't even really try in the movie, does he?
There's a whole sequence where, to fool the villains, he sort of takes off his cape and uses that to convince... ties it to a chair or something.
Yes, they're chasing him.
Yeah.
So he strings up his cape and cowl and, like...
Well, that's the thing, yeah. Does he need to send off the cowl? Because that means that he's basically now running through the streets in a Batman costume with his hood off.
Excuse me, are you Batman?
I could be Batman.
Are you Batman?
I think I could be based on this film.
You're not Batman.
I'm not Batman.
Don't tell Batman how to do his job.
Someone needs to.
What, are you retarded? He's the goddamn Batman.
That is, of course, a quote from the comics before
That's
we get any
All-Star
complaints.
That's from All-Star Batman and Robin.
Written by?
Frank Miller.
So blame Frank Miller if you've got any problem. I think he's probably not bothered about it by now.
No.
So yeah, once it gets into its own, it's quite good. You know, there's some nice sort of fight scenes, nice confrontation between, first of all, the girl and the Joker, and then Batman and the Joker.
There's some good superhero battle royale going
on. Yeah, no, definitely, but... Just as it's getting good, the girl and the Joker disappear in a puff of smoke, and that's the end of the film.
I had dreams like that, just when it's getting good, the girl vanishes in a puff of smoke.
It's for her own safety. I had the same problem with that as you had with Sherlock, in that there was no resolution there. You know, I mean, at the end, they kind of flash to her on board a ferry, having a nice time. And it's like, so she must have defeated the Joker at some point. But to have that happen off screen feels like a massive cheat.
It's unsatisfying, sure. It's not as unsatisfying as Sherlock, though, I will say.
It's almost as bad.
It is unsatisfying, but it's not. I mean, I still came out of that film satisfied.
If the build-up had been good and enjoyable, that would have been okay, but it largely wasn't. It was largely quite slow and dull.
Okay, bearing in mind that the animated series is 20 minutes versus 90,
yeah,
would you be tempted to watch more?
I'd be tempted, because I think the pacing was my major problem with this film. I mean, as long as the episodes of the animated series actually wrap up their storyline rather than just having them teleport out.
Mostly, yeah. So do you understand what all the fuss is about, I guess is my point?
Yes and no. I think compared to some of the other superhero cartoons at the time, it's certainly better executed. But I still wouldn't say it was something that is worth the applause that it's been given over the years. You know,
it's a show that is consistently high quality and doesn't treat its audience like they were 5 years old.
Well, it's a pity you didn't show me an example of it which was consistently high quality and didn't treat its audience like...
Oh, there you go. So, out of five then, Pete?
Three. I didn't love it. I guess I didn't hate it.
Meh?
Meh. Let's see what I can come up with for you next week. Maybe I'll make you eat some greens.
Catastrophic. Unprecedented. Batman and Robin not available. You know what this means, don't you?
If you're thinking what I'm afraid you're thinking...
Precisely, Chief O'Hara. The moment we've dreaded for years has arrived. This time, we're going to have to solve a case ourselves.
So, that's our first issue of a brand new era for the all-new, all-similar Dork Avengers.
We're not quite done yet, though, Pete. Have you about that puzzle? Have you found the answer yet? I'll remind you, trying to get into a castle, there's a 10-metre-wide square moat, and you've got a bridge builder who can only build planks of wood 9.5 metres.
I've got the answer.
Yeah.
Yep. Basically, what I need is the Infinity Gauntlet and the 5 Infinity Gems.
No.
Okay, fine, I'll give. Is the answer that you have him build a 1 1-metre plank going across the corner,
yeah,
and then you have him building the 9.5 one that goes to the castle.
So you mean that you kind of make up the difference by having a diagonal plank?
Exactly.
No.
Oh.
Well, I mean, that would work, but actually what you do is you get on your mobile phone and you phone David Hasselhoff and you say to him, "Hi, David, is Kit around? I need you to turbo boost over this moat so I can get into the castle." Ow! Yeah, your solution works too.
You're worse than Professor Layton.
Nothing satisfies like a puzzle solved.
So, that was the Dork Avengers. What have we got coming up in the next issue for the readers to look forward to, Dunk?
In the next issue of the Dork Avengers, I find a letter from a Nigerian prince telling me I've won a fortune and go on a cross-country adventure to find my money.
And I build a spaceship that takes me to the moon, where I find out that it's actually made of failed dreams. We've been the Dork Avengers. Goodbye.
Bye.
And so we come to the end of another pointless episode in the lives of our socially awkward duo. But remember, wherever they speak of geeks, wherever they've heard of nerds, you'll find the Dork Avengers!
Are you sure people are going to know enough that it's Legend of Zelda to know that we're talking about Legend of Zelda and not just hear a lot of bleeps when we talk about Legend of Zelda?
They will, because I'm really shit at bleeping. Jesus!
This is why I shouldn't have come. Ow, my head exploded because I laughed.
Dear.
Oh, fuck, that hurts. Oh. This is why I don't eat curry. It does things to me.